I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Kaylin.
And you are tuning in to Sociologic here on CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting live from the very top of Burnaby Mountain.
We're stoked to be your host for the next hour, exploring local and global events using sociological perspectives. Thanks for tuning in.
Hello, hello.
Good evening.
How's everybody's night going?
I mean, everyone can very much respond.
Yeah, that's super awesome. I love talking to myself. Do it all the time. Don't even sweat. Welcome to Sociologic. I'm Kaylin.
And I'm Rebecca.
And we're broadcasting to you live from the top of Burnaby Mountain. We are on the unceded lands of the Coquitlam, Musqueam, and Squamish and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. Thanks for tuning in. How's everybody's net? I keep saying that. I think it's... I haven't been doing a lot of public speaking. That's just a big public speaking thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, how's your night, Kaylin?
My night's going good. My roommate got pizza, and so I got to have some pizza. And then I talked to my awesome friend Zoe, and I love her and I miss her, and I want to give her a hug really bad. Supposedly she's tuning in, so maybe I'll find a song and dedicate it to her.
You can give a virtual hug over the sound waves of the radio.
Ooh, Zoe, do you feel it? But yeah, so we've got some fun stuff today. We're doing our next edition of Theory Deep Dive.
Hell yeah.
And so we will be talking about Karl Marx and some of his ideas through some nice sociological perspectives. But as we have been doing, I've gotten to really enjoy this part of our episode, Rebecca, talking about something that we have appreciated or we're looking forward to this week. Would you like to start?
Yeah, I can start. To be honest, I've had a lot that's brought me joy this past week, have to say. I spent a lot of time with friends, but particularly, technically today, but it will be yesterday for, like, the UK. It was my mum's birthday.
What?
So it was really nice to... I stayed up till, like, 11 p.m. on the 7th to make it so I was calling her the morning of her birthday. And I had a nice chat with my parents and my brother, and I got to see my mom open her cards and stuff. And also, like, a couple of days before that, they were in Germany, and I got to see my uncle and my cousins on FaceTime.
Aww.
So I was like, I had a nice little, like, family catch-up birthday type of thing, because also April is just a busy month of birthdays. It's my old housemate from last year and closest friend's birthday today as well. And then I've got another friend's birthday coming up. My dad's birthday's next week. Then my birthday's the week after.
That's super sweet.
So, yeah. Feeling the love and the joy.
Yay, dude. I love that.
Mm-hmm. What about you?
Amazing. Let's see. Well, yes. It's my last week of school, which is crazy.
Man, feel the freedom already.
It feels really like a sham, I would say. what brought me joy, it was this weekend I had my first regatta for rowing. Go SFU Rowing! and that was super duper fun. I missed competing in team sports. I used to play so many sports, and it's been like almost 2 years since I've been on a team, and I missed it so much, and it was so fun to hang out with all the people, even though we had to wake up at 4:45 a.m. but then I got a row, and it was super awesome, and just was all great, and yeah, nice. Basically it was awesome, and yeah, so
yeah, that's good. You got to be outside, your favorite place.
And it was so sunny out. I got a little bit of heat exhaustion, probably low key. do we want to play a song and then we'll get chatting?
Yeah, I think also before we get chatting, we can through some definitions, because I feel like Marxism and neo-Marxism has a lot of terminology in it that if you are not a part of, like, sociology or, like, psychology potentially, or politics or anything like that, you're not gonna understand the terms. So we can have a song and then we can go into some definitions before we properly get chatting about Marxism and neo-Marxism and Karl Marx and all that, because I feel like I will be spitting these words out as it's just like natural when you've studied it.
Exactly. That was actually Rebecca volunteering to freestyle a rap for us about Karl Marx. So we'll play our song and then Rebecca will be here with a rap afterwards. So stay tuned.
With my definitions.
But anyways, here's a song for you. We'll be back soon with some definitions. Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, sounds good.
Perfect. So shall we start with I Don't Want to Say Goodbye?
Yes. A bit about you about this song is it's by Canadian artist Aidan Evans, and I heard it through Michaela, one of our favorite regular artists in Sociologic. It's one of her classmates released this song, and I listened to it on Spotify. I'm pretty sure it's probably on YouTube as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a really kind of, I don't know, it's kind of like a slow song, but I thought it was very unique. So
super cool.
Yeah. Shout out to Aidan Evans.
Well, here we go.
I don't want to say goodbye.
And we're back. That was Aiden Evans. I don't want to say goodbye. Yeah, so we are going to start this off. I can talk to us. We're talking about Karl Marx today. Welcome back to the Theory Deep Dive on Sociologic. if you're just joining us, today's Theory Deep Dive is about Karl Marx and Marxism. So a little bit about this Karl Marx man. You might have heard about Marxism or some of his ideas. He's known for a lot of things. He was really pumping out the information, the ideas. He was a big thinker.
Yeah, was he back in like the 1800s, I want to say? Yeah.
1818 to 1883, to be exact. so he, a little bit about him. He has a background in law, philosophy, journalism. He was a radical philosopher. Basically, the reason he was able to produce so much stuff is because his wife was like pretty rich, and
that's
his
always helpful.
Friend, like her family had money, and then also his friend Frederick Engels, who he writes a lot with, also had money, so he was able to.
Did Marx have money or no?
Not really. Actually,
that's interesting for that time to be not from money and to marry a woman from money. Not for money, but for money.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
I think she might have also been an academic, if I am remembering correctly, but I might be confusing my old German sociologist thinkers. Another funny thing that's kind of interesting is because he would always go write in the library, because back then there wasn't really Google.
Shock horror.
If you wanted to work with anything, you had to go to the library.
You had to read.
But the thing is, the libraries were very classy. They weren't like our public libraries where it's everybody's allowed to go in. He had to wear a nice jacket. But sometimes, like, because they weren't always living with the wife's family, they didn't always have the money, so he'd have to pawn his jacket. And so then he wouldn't be able to write, but then he would get his jacket back and then he'd be able to go write more. It was
funny. Imagine that you can't go write about what you're wanting to write about because you have to keep pawning your jacket.
You can't write about wage inequality and like workers' rights because you can't pay for a jacket. He just was alive during a lot of things. Industrial Revolution was well underway, and he was seeing the results of that in old Europe. He was lived in Germany for a lot of his time. He kind of rejected the idea of liberal reform, which is liberalism generally is the idea that if you give people rights, they will continue to give them to more people. And he rejected that. He was like, that's not going to happen. It's going to get stuck. There's going to be people who don't want to spread it along. He just had a lot to say. And he worked a lot with this guy named Frederick Engels, who was also a German philosopher. So there's a lot of things that are like Marx and Engels. But, they had a lot of thoughts. They kind of were under this idea. There's this guy named Hegel's and Hegelism, which was just a different strand of philosophy. And they kind of worked under, and they were called like the New Hegel's or like Young Hegel's Society or something. Basically like a fan club where they all came and thought about Hegelism and stuff, but then kind of rejected some of his ideas. But yeah, so Rebecca's gonna start us off with some definitions.
Yeah, you've probably taken my first definition was what is Marxism, and you've pretty much done that underway, I feel. But it is essentially just a theory that was developed by Karl Marx, viewing that society is divided into two main classes, which is the bourgeoisie and the proletariat. Now, the bourgeoisie are the basically ruling class. They're the owners of the means of production. And the proletariat are your working class, where your labor force, essentially. Mm-hmm. And Marx...
One other thing about the proletariat is a big thing about it is they are the only thing... Because the bourgeoisie have access to the means of production, the bourgeoisie have nothing except... The only thing they have to sell is their labor.
Mm-hmm.
So...
the proletariat.
Yeah, sorry, yeah. The proletariat.
I was about to say, the bourgeoisie and not
can only sell their labor, and that's how they become a worker, is because the only thing that they don't have access to the means of life or anything, so all they get to do is sell their labor.
Yeah. And with like this theory, it essentially means that Marxism argues that the capitalist system will lead to class conflict and exploitation. And so Marx is a very strong believer in a classless communist society. And then there's neo-Marxism, which is the modern adaptation of Marxism in what I would say it kind of uses Marx's original ideas and tries to make them more relevant to a contemporary society or to the more modern society. Not necessarily contemporary, because neo-Marxism is still, I would say, considered outdated now. Mm-hmm. Because obviously Marx was making Marxism in the 1800s. Neo-Marxism is, you're probably looking more like 1950s, 60s, I want to say. Mm-hmm. Maybe 1970s. So I would say it's still technically now outdated. So there is probably another one, like another version of neo-Marxism, but yeah, I'm not 100% sure. But neo-Marxism basically focused more on the culture and ideology and roles of institutions like the media and the education system and how they maintain capitalism rather than just focusing heavily on the economic difference. Mm-hmm. So they look at how capitalism is maintained through these institutions, and neo-Marxism is applicable more in looking at the intersectionality within sociology. So looking at like your gender inequalities, your ethnic inequalities and stuff, rather than Marx, which just basically looked at class and that was it. Even though Marxism as a theory can be applied to all inequalities, Marx focused heavily on the economic and the class structure.
Yeah. Some people, I think he probably would describe himself as an economist.
Possibly. Yeah.
But he just, a lot of the way he looked at it was very much in the social.
Yeah.
Based in the social. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, whereas where
it becomes very relevant.
Yeah. And that's where like neo-Marxism differs. They try and cater their theoretical approaches to the different inequalities rather than using like one class one and trying to just shove it into the other ones,
yeah,
which is more, I would say, what Marxism is. And then we're going to talk a bit about false class consciousness, which is a key kind of concept within Marxism. Mm-hmm. And it's where the proletariats are misled into believing that capitalism is a benefit to them, mm-hmm, and that prevents them from recognizing that they're being exploited and to then stop them from challenging capitalism in the class system.
Yeah.
So it essentially is the concept that explains how the power of the bourgeoisie is maintained.
Yeah, basically Marx's big like idea and hope, which it is understood that Marx would see today and be very disappointed, because yeah, he was super convinced that either in his lifetime or right after his lifetime, because of how poor the working conditions were, mm-hmm, and how unhappy people were as workers, that the proletariat would unite and overthrow the bourgeoisie and then instate socialism. And,
yeah.
Which is what would happen. But that has not happened.
Yeah.
And he writes a lot about this in some of his work with Engels. And it has been misinterpreted in the past,
mm-hmm,
for sure. But
yeah, he was very much like the working class will be united and overthrow the class system at some point, which, you never know the future, might happen still.
Yeah.
But as of right now, it's a no, has not happened. And then moving on to what I would say is a very key concept with neo-Marxism is called hegemonic ideology or hegemony. People pronounce it different
ways.
That's
so funny. We call it hegemonic.
Yeah, I was going to say, people pronounce it in different ways.
It sounds like maybe that's how you say it across the pond.
Across the pond in England.
Across
in
the
in the United Kingdom. It potentially is an across the pond pronunciation, hegemonic. But I think even when I was learning this, like, my different teachers all pronounced it differently. So you're kind of just like, oh, so what is the pronunciation? But it doesn't matter. As long as you can spell it, that's fine. It was in an essay.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
But that is a neo-Marxist concept where it refers to the dominant beliefs and values in society are accepted as, like, the common sense and maintain the status quo. But they actually just help helping the ruling class maintain their power and control without excessive force. So it's kind of like you're being tricked and persuaded into like believing the ideology that doesn't benefit you, but you believe it benefits you.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say an example
will be better than it's. I remember learning this concept and it was like, once you got an example, you got it. But trying to like explain it without one.
Well, I don't know. This is an example that kind of would go along. I don't know if this, you'll have to tell me if this fits under your mm-hmm. understanding of like what you're talking about. Also, I want to share with the class that my finger is itching really bad and it's really annoying. I thought that you guys all could join in on that and maybe it would make me feel better if more people knew.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Side note.
So basically, there's this idea of the do what you love. Have I talked to you about this?
Yeah, you've mentioned it, I think, in an episode.
I have. Basically, there's do what you love is, yeah, did we talk about it last week? What were we talking about last week? Last week we were talking about neoliberalism.
But also in menial labor, I think you've spoken about do what you love.
Oh, really?
Maybe.
Basically, anyway, yeah. There's this idea that the do what you love, a lot of these corporations and stuff are being like, wow, like you should totally come do what you love. Like your work should be your passion. If you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life.
Yeah.
But as a result, that kind of is alienating of the workers. Something Marx talks a lot about is different forms of alienation, which we can get to in a couple minutes if we'd mm-hmm. like. But basically, because people are so focused on their work as a personal improvement endeavor rather than what it is work and, in many cases, exploitation, they just are not able to unite because, well, I'm so focused on doing this because I love it that I can't see all of the people who have to work super horrible conditions to make it so that I can do work that I love. For example, Steve Jobs, CEO, or I think he's no longer. He's not the CEO anymore. But
I mean, Steve Jobs is dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's not the CEO.
Yeah.
This is what I thought. I guess I was confused. But basically, yeah. Starting Apple, he was like, "It's my passion. I just did it out of a garage." But that disregards all of the people, in the factories who are building all of the iPhones, etc., etc. All of these things. There's
mm-hmm.
Some horrible working conditions that go into making these iPhones. Super horrible. I would look it up of like Apple horrible factory conditions because it's actually really disturbing. Yeah. But does that fit your idea? Basically, that idea of certain ideas being taken as important that then cause alienation and separation, a lack of unity between the workers?
Somewhat. I feel like that's a type of it. Because
mm-hmm.
the hegemonic ideology that the example that I mainly use with it is the American dream. In that, obviously the American dream is the idea that you can have like all the success and like money in the world just through hard work and like mm-hmm. determination, right? Yeah. It ignores all of the systemic barriers mm-hmm. that prevent that. And I think that ideology, it just is a very clear sign of it because it justifies a capitalist system without like acknowledging any like gender barriers, ethnicity barriers, age barriers, mm-hmm. class barriers, like all the barriers are just ignored. It's just like, you can do it through hard work. All you need is hard work. Hard work equals success, yay. Which is like, again, if you want to take the neo-Marxist point of view, that is reiterated through your education system.
Mm-hmm.
Hard work in academia, get good grades, you will be successful. That is your method to life.
Yeah, and especially now, people are going against that idea a lot.
Yeah.
It's not true, and it's not true for everybody.
Yeah.
All of these things.
Mm-hmm. Like, there's a very prominent English TV presenter called Jeremy Clarkson, and on A-level results day, and GCSE results day, so our big main exams at the end of when you're 16 and when you're 18,
mm-hmm.
He releases a tweet every year telling people, I got like C's and D's and stuff, and look where I am. He's a very successful TV presenter and things, mm-hmm. and he has a lot of money. And so he's like, you do not need good grades, do not mean everything. Bad grades do not mean the end of the world. Mm-hmm. And it's a very clear example of like where this ideology just fails.
For sure.
But, yeah.
But then also, like, the other side of it is there can be super successful people who have systemic barriers of oppression against yeah. them. And, yeah, basically they get passed up.
Yeah. And then the next one, which I feel like I'm going to, like, skip a few and come back because I feel like we've spoken about them. But the, like, last one that I had as kind of something that I'm going to touch upon is from it's another neo-Marxist concept, and it's called dual class consciousness, mm-hmm. and it's from a neo-Marxist thinker, which I think you mentioned to me because I didn't actually know it was by them, but W.E.B. Du Bois.
Oh yes, I love Du Bois.
I didn't realize that they came up with this concept, because when I learned it, we didn't learn it from them, we just learned it as the concept. Not like awesome. Who, not who it was by, but it's originally applied in a
you could say
in an ethnic context, but it can be applied in a class context as well.
Yeah.
And it refers to the idea that individuals are aware of both the dominant ideology, so they're aware of their false class consciousness from before, but they're also aware of their real class interest, which is known as true class consciousness. At the same time, so it kind of creates a conflicted awareness, because false class consciousness gives the idea that people are not aware of the ideology that's tricking them, essentially. They're unaware of their exploitation. But this dual class consciousness idea is that they are aware. They are just also aware of like their own interests as a class group. So it's a conflicted awareness. And the way it's used in, like, ethnicity is, I'm pretty sure it was with...
I have the quote of him talking about it, actually. So it's amazing. In his Souls of Black Folk, which is a piece of his talking about the experience of being a black person in America, because he's from the American South, and is a phenomenal thinker, has a lot of amazing work, but... consistently, he was alive from 1868 to 1963, so very much in the time of a lot of oppressive, I mean, America still has a lot of oppressive things happening, but very intense and outwardly oppressive. So the quote is double consciousness. So he says, it's a peculiar sensation, this double consciousness, the sense of always looking at oneself through the eyes of others, of measuring one's soul by the tape of a world that looks on in amused contempt and pity. So basically it's that idea of having to reconcile the idea of being black and also being American when it's kind of like goes along with the idea of code switching also, like, about kind of follows his analyses on lots of the racism happening, but